May that spirit of life known to us each in different ways and by different names be with us in each moment of our living, calling us ever forward to more love and hope. Ashe, amen, shalom. What does it mean to be a people of letting go? 100 Unitarian Universalist congregations across the country are using the same themes each month, and the ministers of these 100 churches have an electronic group, Facebook group, to share ideas. Someone posts in, oh, we're doing this, this kind of thing. And so a few weeks ago, someone wrote in, because this October is the theme, what does it mean to be a people of letting go? Someone wrote in, can we all promise that we will not use let it go in worship? And I wrote back as fast as I could, no way, we're totally using it. And Tim is wondering right now why that couldn't be the minister of this church. I said, no, it's multi-generational. It's great, the kids know it, and it captures the spirit of what I want to say this morning so well. How can I not? I don't care what they're going to say. It's funny how some distance makes everything seem so small. And the fears that once controlled me can't get to me at all. It's time to see what I can do and test the limits and break through. There's a version of this, a parody of sorts online, in which there's lots of parodies of this online, but one I'm thinking of in which the chorus is slightly changed. Instead of singing, let it go, she sings, well, I can't say it from the pulpit. It's something like, screw it all, if you know what I mean. Perfect. It's perfect. It gets at the theme just as well. If you're not a parent or a grandparent or an aunt or uncle, you might not know the basic storyline of Frozen. I find that amazing, but it's possible, so let me catch you up. Elsa has the power to turn things to ice. And when she's angry or afraid, it happens. In terror of this power, she isolates herself, but things go wrong, and it happens anyway. So she runs away into the mountains, and the song is when she decides to use her power, who cares what everyone else thinks, and it marks the turning point, because, spoiler alert, she learns eventually to control it and use it for good. Eventually, there's a lot more singing first, but I'll spare you all of that. Sometimes it takes a great sky to find that first, bright, indescribable wedge of freedom in your own heart. That's what it takes, right? A moment comes when we get up off the dirt, or we uncurl from the fetal position, or we just decide, screw it all, and we start being ourselves. We find the bright and indescribable wedge of freedom in our own heart. David White's poem, The Journey, is a riff off Mary Oliver's poem by the same title, The Journey. Both poems speak of this realization. One day you finally knew what you had to do, Oliver writes in hers, though the voices round you cried, mend my life, you strode off into the woods. And David White's point is that when you make this journey, when you leave behind all those people who expect you to be a good girl, when you walk away from the anxiety and the reactivity of others, you're not leaving, you're arriving. Arriving at yourself. I want to talk about letting go of anxiety this morning, letting go and being yourself. So let me say something about anxiety. Acute anxiety is normal. We get anxious sometimes. It's fine. It's actually healthy, the body and the mind working to make us more alert and to give us more energy and focus in that moment. The big interview, the car that swerves in front of us, the health crisis. These things naturally produce moments of anxiety. But normally, as we get more information or as the moment passes, we just remember to breathe in and breathe out. We let go of our stress. These moments of anxiety fade away. At least that's the idea. But it doesn't always work, does it? Sometimes we live with chronic anxiety. And so this kind of anxiety becomes normal for us. In fact, we become so accustomed to chronic anxiety that we start to depend on it. If we weren't worried about something, we wouldn't know what to do with ourselves. There are different kinds of anxiety: acute, chronic, and also medical. There is a mental health issue, a chemical imbalance that some folks have. And anxiety and fear produces certain chemicals to help you through the stress, but some brains produce that chemical, those chemicals, without any stimulation. They just run. And so you need to balance that out somehow, and mindfulness work or exercise can help, and a lot of folks use medication to balance out that anxiety. I am not talking about medical anxiety today. And I don't want you who suffer from this or who have loved ones who do to think that I'm saying, let it go to a medical diagnosis of anxiety disorder. My doctorate is in ministry, not in medicine. And this is not a sermon about mental health, although some of the things I say might be helpful to you as well. But don't substitute my 20 minutes for a doctor. No, because what I want to talk about today is free-floating, non-specific anxiety. You know, that stuff that just is out there. Chronic anxiousness, reactivity. Everything makes us panic. Everything is a crisis. We're on edge all the time, and so on edge, we don't know what we'd do if we weren't on edge. A friend of mine, I've changed only his name, but the rest of this is an actual true story. Sometimes I do mostly true stories. This is an actual true story. Joseph had this lousy job. He was stressed about it all the time. Long hours, lots of stress, not a lot of reward. So he started looking for new jobs, got a new job. That's great, I thought. Your stress level is going to decline. You're going to be something that you enjoy more, better work environment. And he even had 2 weeks off between leaving the old job and starting the new job. And I said, that's great. You can relax, like clean the house, read a book. It'll be wonderful. But no, he was anxious about having nothing to do during that whole time that he was off work, totally stressed out when he should have been just enjoying vacation. And then the new job started, and you guessed it, totally stressed out. And months later, still totally stressed out about the job. Eventually, one starts to see that it isn't the job or the circumstances at all. Some people are just anxious. Joseph was anxious, and it didn't matter what the job was or wasn't. He was anxious all the time. It was him. And it's not just people, individuals, who can be anxious either, right? Some families are all drama all the time. It's like they're auditioning for a reality television show. I'm with folks like this, and I look around. I'm like, where is the camera? What is going on? Do anyone know any people like this? Maybe your family is like this sometimes. They'll say, oh, it's temporary. It was just, we're going through a little thing. This will pass. But there always seems to be something else next. Always drama. A little secret. Some churches are like this too. I have colleagues who serve congregations, and it seems like they are having a fight every week. Drama. Can you believe what so-and-so said? Oh my God, I can't believe it. Everyone is on edge all the time. What if the budget doesn't come in? Who's gonna make coffee? Nobody signed up. We'd better panic. The sky is falling. And the classic, of course, is so-and-so is upset about something. What are they upset about? Nobody really knows, but they're upset about something. Well, we can't have that. The pastor better go visit them really quick. It's her job to make everyone happy all the time. I know churches like this, to which I say, the cold never bothered me anyway. It's not that I don't care about your happiness, because I do very much, or that I don't want to solve problems that come up, because I do, and I reach out to people who might be upset about things, and we try to walk it through. And if you come to me and you want to talk about something, I am totally here for you. But I will not intuit your frustration or rush in to manage other people's interpersonal dynamics or change the mission to suit one person's personal preference. I won't do it. And I could say it's because I want to treat you like adults who are responsible for your own feelings. That's what it means to be an adult, by the way, to be responsible for your own feelings. Some people who are grown-ups are not adults. That's the truth. But I don't even treat my kids with kid gloves. At least I try not to. I will help you solve your problem, I tell them. They're 8 and 5. But I will not do it for you. And if you want something, ask nicely. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. Our church isn't perfect, but I think we're actually reasonably healthy about this. And I think part of that is that most of the leaders here function the same way that I try to function. I can think of conflicts we've had in the last few years, disagreements and things that come up, and each time the leader said, "We'll hear you out, we'll treat you with respect, we'll learn from your ideas, we'll adjust as we need to, but we won't decide what to do based on who is more upset or more anxious. We'll decide based on the mission, what's good for the congregation as a whole, what makes the world more beautiful." I get the impression, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I get the impression it didn't used to always be this way around here, but I think that it is most of the time now, and I'm pretty proud of all of us for this. It's one of the many reasons that I love being your minister. One of the many reasons. You're not chronically anxious. And every time I talk to my colleagues in congregations who are chronically anxious, I love you all even more. I really do. Here is some of the best advice I've ever been given. Don't feed the anxiety loop. Just don't do it. Let it go. Church, family, work life, civic life, when the most anxious person in the room gets to set the agenda, the results are never good. It's the truth, and we all know it. Even when we're the most anxious person in the room, we know in our heart that we should not be in charge. So what can you do? If you're feeling chronically anxious yourself, or if you feel caught in a chronically anxious system, what can you do to let it go? It's one thing for me to say, let it go, but how do you actually do that without stuffing things, as Kim was talking about, to actually let it go? There are books and books and books and books, and I've read most of them. So let me give you just 3 little suggestions. First, a little distance makes everything seem so small. Elsa is right about that. Get away from the situation. It's amazing what a little time and space can do. Steinke says that when you are stuck in anxiety, you are always reacting instead of creating. Anxiety makes us reactive. Stop reacting. Leave the house. Take a vacation. Go for a walk. Build in time every day away from the most anxious place in your life, wherever that is. If you're a caregiver, this can be hard to do, but it's essential. Get somebody to sit there for an hour so you can go and do something else. Let me say, TV doesn't count. Neither does Facebook or Twitter, I'm sorry to say. It's easy for me to say TV doesn't count. It's hard for me to say Twitter doesn't count, but it's true. Some people say, I'll unwind by watching television. But the brain doesn't work that way. It won't work, I promise. Let go of your need to be entertained or distracted. Let go of the chemical push that anxiety and conflict and drama provide. You're going to feel symptoms of withdrawal. You will. And you'll be tempted to re-enter the ivy of franticness, but resist that urge. Trust me, I've been there. Unplug for long enough, however, and you may come back and wonder, what was it you were so worked up about in the first place? Get some space. Take some time. Second, don't take responsibility for other people when they can do it themselves. And 95% of the time, they can do it themselves. Anxious people generally need someone to take care of, or they need someone to take care of them. Get off that treadmill. Anxious systems are all about everyone taking care of everyone else and no one taking care of themselves. Edwin Friedman is someone who writes a lot about anxious systems and leadership and the church and systems theory and how families and organizations work. And he has this group of fables called Friedman's Fables. And one of them is called The Bridge, which I want to tell for you. A man was walking along the river, came across a second man. And the second man had a rope, which he had tied around his waist, and he was holding the other end of the rope. And so the first man was coming along, and the second man took the end of the rope, and he threw it to the first man, who sort of instinctively caught it, and then the second man jumped in the river. And the second man said, "Hold on to the rope, I can't swim. I'm going to drown." And the first man said, "You didn't ask me to take this. You didn't ask if I was okay holding this, and I don't really, I'm on my way to a very important appointment, and I have my family to go see, and I can't just hold on to this. Why didn't you jump in the river if you can't swim? What were you thinking?" And the second man says, "Hold on to the rope or I'll drown. You have to save me." And the first man says, "Well, I'm going to try to pull you in." And he didn't have enough strength to do it. But he could hold on, but he couldn't get him in. And he said, you got to swim. The second man said, "I can't swim." So the first man was holding that. He didn't want to let him go. He was a good, decent person. But he couldn't stand there forever. And his fingers were starting to get sore, his hands, and he couldn't do it. And he said, "Here, spin, and you'll shorten the distance of the rope. Just turn and grab onto it, and you'll get closer, and then I can pull you in." And the second man said, "No, I can't possibly do that. I'm in the river. You have to save me. You have to save me." And the first man said, "No, you can do this. We can get you out." But the second man refused to do anything to take care of himself. And eventually the first man said, "Look, I'm going to let go if you don't start to help." And the second man said, "I'm not going to do it." So he counted to five, and he let go. I'm not saying don't save someone who is drowning. But as every therapist is taught, if you're doing more work than the client, you're doing it wrong. Part of this involves letting go of our need to be perfect, our need to not make mistakes. We're going to make mistakes, and if we let other people do things on their own, they might not do them the way that we want them. They might have disasters. But we can't be responsible for everyone else's life when they won't take any responsibility at all. If they try, that's a different story. But to become less anxious, we got to stop being in charge of everybody else's life. Let it go. Let it be enough. You can set expectations if that's your role as a boss or a parent or a teacher, but they have to try themselves. Third thing, cultivate a spirit of adventure. A good leader in whatever context encourages others to take chances, risks, to imagine more. Be the flea who believes they can fly. Why not? Do notice how the more cautious flea does actually in the end follow along. They go and the flea comes. And in the end is willing to talk about, maybe now and then I will travel and see things. You can actually produce a change in other people's behavior by being adventurous and responsible yourself. They'll see that's the way to live. If the adventurous flea let the cautious one set the agenda, neither of them would have ever seen anything but the backside of the dog. One of the things that folks who do this work write about is how essential playfulness is in combating anxiety. Anxious systems can't take a joke. Everything is serious all the time. Everyone is on edge, ready to be offended at any minute. Friedman also says that the main way that you can tell an anxious system is by its lack of playfulness. So laugh, play, trip up and try again. Instead of thinking, what could happen if I do this? Think, what could happen if I do this? It's an attitude shift. It's letting go of what is deadly so you can live in what is life. This quality of letting go is essential for leaders and for systems and for individual people. It's essential, but it isn't easy. If we don't do it, we will all be stuck hostage to the most anxious person, even when that's ourselves. It takes practice. But here's the good news. Two pieces of good news about letting go of anxiety. First is that it gets easier. Just as reactive anxious systems form a feedback loop, a non-anxious, adventurous, playful, mature system forms a feedback loop too. If you don't give into anxiety, anxious people will stop hanging around you. They really will. It's true. You just have to stick to it long enough. And then folks will either start taking responsibility for their own lives or they'll go find somebody else who will take care of them. If you take adventures, then others can come along or they can stay behind, and that's up to them, not up to you. If you take responsibility for yourself, others will start taking responsibility for themselves, or they won't, but it won't be your problem all the time. It gets easier. The second piece of good news, well, that's why this is a sermon and not a lecture about psychology. God, if you will, the Spirit, if you will, is a non-anxious, adventurous, responsible force. Divinity, the Spirit, the universe itself, life, whatever you call or however you understand that thing that moves in and through us, instead of seeing the holy, seeing life, seeing everything as tightly wound, as controlling and directing, we can let go of that illusion, that suffocating security blanket. Let the river of peace flow through you. Let the soothing waters flow, not stagnate. Flow. Let the power of life flow freely. Let wonder and awe and love flow freely, and you'll be so much more in touch with wonder and love and life. So much more in touch with the Spirit. Let it blow where it will. Be open. Let go of the need for all the answers, for safety, for harmony, and instead listen and lead and follow with love and hope, with possibility. Be free. Fly. Don't think, what is going to happen? Think, what is going to happen? Practice and keep at it. And breathe in and breathe out. And who knows? Before you know it, you too will feel like you can fly. I invite you to rise in body or spirit. We're going to sing together, I Wish I Knew How, which is number 151.
Thank you.
Please be seated. It is great to be together for worship this morning. Thank you for coming. All kinds of things coming up in the life of the church. The auction is 2 weeks from yesterday, on Saturday the 17th. We got lots of great donations in the catalog. The book comes out on Wednesday, so be sure to look for that online or pick one up on Sunday and pick out what you want to bid on. And there'll be proxy forms if you can't be there and all that stuff. So look for that coming out. Lots of great stuff going to be in the auction. The anti-racism class that we're doing, some of you are signed up for, will be after the second service. We'll be in Deal Hall for that. We've got the Famous You Use to sign up for, the Wonderful Wednesday program, all kinds of stuff happening. So take a look and be part of that. In a moment, we'll take up an offering to support the work of justice and mercy in the world. October is a month where we try to turn some of our attention to the prevention of domestic violence and abuse and its solutions and serving those who have been harmed and caught in those systems of oppression. And so this week, we'll be collecting for Remedies, which works with victims and survivors of domestic violence. And I hope you can be generous this morning. 80% of what we collect will go to support their work. If you are new with us this morning, thank you for being here. We're so glad you came to check us out. I hope you stopped at the guest table on your way in. If not, please do so on your way out. Next week, Michelle, one of our two interns who's working with us, as well as the Unitarian Church in McHenry, Illinois, will be preaching about letting go and recovery and addiction and some of the things we can learn by those things for our own lives. About how we let go and move forward. So if you know someone in your life who might be interested in that message, please do bring them with you. The offering will now be given and received. I'll extinguish the chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These things we carry with us until we are together again. I invite you to rise in body or spirit and join hands with those around you for our benedictions. Although there was great disagreement about whether to use the song, Let It Go, in worship this month among my colleagues, I suspect that almost all of us will sometime, either today or in the next few weeks, use these words of benediction from the poet Mary Oliver. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it, and when the time comes, to let it go, to let it go. We'll sing together our closing blessing. Go your way in peace.